the Ultimate Health Podcast, episode 116. Jesse Chapp is here with Marnie Wasserman, and we are here to take your health to the next level. Today, our featured guest is Dr. Michael Bruce, a clinical psychologist, and he is known as the Sleep Doctor. He's on the clinical advisory board at the Dr. Oz Show and appears regularly on that show. He's also been interviewed on CNN, Oprah, The View, Anderson Cooper, The Today Show. He's just done a ton of great media. He's the author of three books, his first being Good Night. His second was The Sleep Doctor's Diet Plan. And his latest, which is coming out right around the release of this interview, The Power of When, which is all about sleeping to your individual sleep schedule. For over 14 years, Dr. Bruce has served as the sleep expert for WebMD. He's been in private practice for 16 years and recently moved that to sunny LA.
Before we get into the details of today's show, I want to share a little bit about the incredible weekend that Jesse and I just had at Via Mead. So Jesse and I had the chance to go to this beautiful resort on the lake, just 2 hours outside of Toronto. And it was the perfect way to wrap up our summer, spend some time out in nature, which we're really big advocates for. So if you get the chance to do that, take advantage. But what we loved about Via Mead was that there is so much to do there. If you are a young couple, if you have a family, if you have a dog like us, you can get into the lake, you can play frisbee golf, which was a really cool experience that Jesse and I had in the forest. You literally throw a frisbee and chase after it and, you know, set it to the next tee, so called it, or the place that it gets captured. And we also had so many incredible meals. The food there was exceptional, the service, and there's lots of paddleboarding and a water trampoline. We just had a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And we also got some incredible sleeps in because we were out in nature away from the city and the lights. So it was really nice to be able to watch the stars and get a good night's rest in.
So hopefully you're getting outside. Summer is wrapping up. Get out, enjoy this weather like we did. And for more information on Via Mead, we're going to put a link over in the show notes so you can go check that out.
So now I'm going to give a shout out to our show sponsor, Sun Warrior, and I'm going to give a highlight to the product that I love most. That's not one of their protein powders, but it's their Liquid Light. So I love, love, love the Liquid Light. It is a complete mineral complex. It is so tough for us to get all the trace minerals that we need on a daily basis to feel good, to look good, to sleep well, all that good stuff. And what's so amazing about this product is all you need is a capful in a glass of water. And it just adds that added dose of minerals and it tastes good. You know, it's not flavored, but it tastes good because you are getting what you need. So, and it's something, if you don't like the taste of it, you can throw it into a smoothie or a juice or anything else you want to blend it up in. But get your hands on Liquid Light. If you haven't tried it yet, you've got to give it a go.
So as a listener of our show, you get 10% off all your Sun Warrior products, including Liquid Light. Just go to ultimatehealthpodcast.com/SW. And for listeners in the US and Canada, bundle that order together. And if you spend $100 or more, you get free shipping. So amazing products, great deals. Go and take advantage. You can thank us later.
So now we're going to get into what we talk about with Dr. Bruce on today's episode. And one of the biggest things we highlight is finding out what your chronotype is. And there is a free online quiz that you can go ahead and do to discover what that is. And Jesse and I went ahead and did that before our episode. So you're going to get to hear a little bit about who we are and how we sleep best. Dr. Bruce also shares an incredible banana tea that is awesome for helping you sleep better. And he talks about what some of the effects are of being sleep deprived and how harmful that is to your health.
He shares the number one way to improve the quality of your sleep, the best pillow and mattress out there, the best time to have sex. That's a good one for all the healthy couples out there. And if you're going to drink alcohol, of course, healthy choices, good quality organic wine, say, when is the best time to drink that and when you should make sure you're having that last glass so you can still have a great sleep. As you can see, this episode is just action-packed. You're going to love it. We've talked a lot about sleep on the show, but this is a whole fresh perspective. Again, you're in for a real treat here. So here we go with Dr. Michael Bruce. Hello, Michael, and welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I am excellent. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're excited to have you. How did you sleep last night?
Everybody always asks. I slept actually really well last night. I mean, people always wonder, because I'm a sleep doctor, do I sleep perfectly? And so the answer to that question is no, I do not sleep perfectly. I am a human, and all humans have sleep problems at certain times in their lives. But last night was actually a great night. I worked out really hard yesterday, and so sometimes my back can give me some problems, but last night it did not, so I'm pretty stoked.
Good, good. We're on some good sleep too, so this is going to be a great conversation. And to kick it off, Michael, let's talk about the mystery behind sleep. All of us kind of know and understand, well, lack of understand what's actually happening when we're sleeping. Let's start there. Let's talk about what's happening during this period of time.
Sure. So most people don't know, but there's actually two separate systems in the brain that control sleep. One is a drive, kind of like hunger, right? So I'm hungry. I eat something and that drive dissipates. The same holds true with sleep, is that drive will build throughout the day. And we've actually been able to narrow it down. It's a very particular neurochemical called adenosine that builds up in the brain. Oddly enough, if you look at the molecular structure of adenosine and the molecular structure of caffeine, they're literally one molecule off. So what happens when we drink caffeine is it hits that receptor site where normally adenosine would be making us feel tired. And that's one of the reasons why caffeine doesn't make you feel tired. It doesn't replace sleep. That adenosine, once you burn through that caffeine, is going to come flooding in. And that's where that caffeine crash comes from. But it's kind of interesting that that's how coffee really helps keep you awake. Now, that's one system. The second system is something called your circadian rhythm. So that's your internal biological clock. And that's the thing that actually tells your bed that it's time, I mean, your brain rather, that it's time to go to bed. So it kind of kicks off around, you know, somewhere between 10 and 10:30 at night for many people out there, and lets them know, hey, it's nighttime. It's time to go to bed. Let's see if we can get going here.
So that actually brings up a point. Is that window of time between 10 and 2, is that as valid as we've been hearing, that if you catch that window and go to bed at 10, that's the best time, and then you have that double amount of sleep between that sleep window?
So it's a great question. And the answer is no, it's not always true. So it all depends upon your chronotype, which is actually the topic of my new book, The Power of When. So lots of people out there have different biorhythms, and these do different things at different times. And so believe it or not, you can't just come up with a generalized bedtime, even though there is data to show that most of the United States goes to bed roughly around 10, 10:30 at night. That's not necessarily good for everyone. It's really based more on, for example, if you're more of an early person or more of a night person, then I might change your bedtimes and change your wake-up times.
Okay, so false, because we do keep hearing that over and over again, that between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m., those hours count as double. That's not true.
Yeah, there's no data I've ever seen to suggest that they count as double. I kind of wouldn't even know how you would measure it. Like, because sleep, the way sleep works is you have the, you know, these two systems, and then you have sleep cycles. So every cycle is approximately 90 minutes long, and every person has very specific dance moves that they do in this cycle. And by dance moves, I mean going through certain stages. So you go from wake to stage one, stage two, stage three, and four, which is called delta sleep. This is actually the most physically restorative sleep that you're going to get. Back to stage two, and then on into REM sleep, which is the most mentally restorative sleep that you're going to get. Each one of those cycles is approximately 90 minutes long. And so once you fall asleep, the process begins. And so I can't think of any reason why your sleep would be double anything really by having it between 10 and 2. It really depends on when you go to sleep. The only thing that might ring true is that we know in the first third of the night is when you get the majority of your delta sleep, which again is that physically restorative sleep. And in the last third is when you get the mentally restored, most of your mentally restorative sleep. So I guess you could say that between 10 and 2, that's the time that you're getting your most physical restoration.
And Michael, we want to congratulate you on the release of your new book, The Power of When. And this is actually going to come out a couple weeks after we release this interview. So I'm sure listeners can go and pre-order the book on Amazon or Indigo or whatever they use, right?
Absolutely. And even better, before you even go to order the book, if you go to the Power of When quiz Com. It's a completely free quiz. You go there and you can actually take a quiz and figure out what your chronotype is. So it turns out that there aren't just early birds and night owls out there. It turns out that there's actually four different chronotypes. And each person, once they know what their chronotype is, I can teach people the perfect time of day to do just about anything from have sex to eat a cheeseburger to ask your boss for a raise. It doesn't matter. I can show you exactly when you are going to be at your optimal potential.
Love it. The importance of when we sleep. That's the whole thesis behind this book. And it's a beauty. Marnie and I really enjoyed it. We went and took the quiz. And just to throw it out there before we dig into these chronotypes, I turned out being a bear and Marnie turned out to be a lion. So
this is interesting. Do you want me to analyze you guys real quick?
Well, let's start out before we get too far ahead of ourselves here. Let's talk about what a chronotype is, and let's give an explanation of what the four chronotypes are, and then we can kind of dig in from there.
You got it. So a chronotype is partially that circadian rhythm that we were just talking about. So historically, when you would look up chronotypes, you would only ever hear of an early bird or a night owl. And that's how all the assessment tools were created. People would find out, is somebody an early riser or somebody kind of a late nighter? But believe it or not, that only makes up between the two, it's 15% for each one. So it only made up about 30% of the population. So you start to wonder, like, well, what about the rest of us? And so I started to do some digging, and what I discovered was that there's actually over 200 evidence-based studies to look at different things that people can do based on their chronotypes, and that there's more than just these two chronotypes. So let me break it down for you. So the early person is what I now call a lion. And I chose a lion as an animal archetype because lions have their first kill early in the morning. They are the leaders of the pack. They often have other animals that are surrounding them that they kind of are the foragers for. And lions in general are some of my biggest leaders. These are my COOs of companies. These are my get it done kind of folks. These people are great managers. They're great leaders, but they're very linear thinkers. They like to go from A to B to C to D. They're not interested in going in 12 different directions. That is a different chronotype. The second one are bears, and bears are the people that aren't early morning people and are not evening people. They're kind of people in the middle. Bears make up roughly 50 to 55% of the population, and these are the people that are the glue of society. These are the people that you love hanging out with. Like when you go to sit down at lunch, you end up sitting down with people that are bears because they've always got a fun story to tell or something interesting that's going on in their lives. They're usually very personable, pretty gregarious. These are the people who are standing next to the keg at the party or ordering, you know, drinks for everyone at the bar. And they're just great people to hang out with and enjoy their company. They also have a great tendency at work to get stuff done. If you give them tasks, they will get them done fairly quickly and usually fairly accurately. My evening people, I've nicknamed the wolves. I chose wolves because wolves in general actually are nocturnal creatures. They hunt at night. They hunt in packs and they do some interesting things. What we know about night people is that they're very different than everybody else. They're sometimes a little bit more introverted. These are my creatives. These are my actors and my writers and my musicians. These are some of the most creative people that you'll come across. But they don't like getting up early, and they certainly don't like going to bed early, as opposed to my lions who love to be in bed by like 9:30 and waking up at 5:30, 6 o'clock. My wolves would love it, if nothing more, to stay up until midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, and then sleep until 8:30, 9 o'clock the next day. But, you know, believe it or not, those three categories don't cover everybody, because as a sleep specialist, I have people who don't sleep so well, people with insomnia, people with poor sleeping habits, things of that nature. And they actually fall into a completely different category. And oftentimes they're stuck there. It's kind of interesting. And so I call them dolphins. The reason I chose dolphins is most people don't know, but dolphins themselves sleep unihemispherically, meaning only half of their brain is asleep while the other half is awake and looking for predators. And so I thought it was an interesting representation of my patients who just don't quite get a great night's sleep. My dolphins are highly intelligent people, but they're also a little on the neurotic side. They have a tendency to be a little OCD. They have a tendency to be type A personalities where they always want to be doing stuff, but they don't always get done exactly what they want to get done. They're kind of like a a reduced version of lions at times, because they're very leader oriented and very type A driven, but a lot of times it's just not happening for them.
Very interesting. Thanks for breaking that down. And now we'd love for you to analyze the lion and the bear.
So, Marnie, you're the lion, right?
Yes.
So if I had to guess, you have a greater tendency to want to be up early in the morning and go to sleep a little bit earlier at night. You probably hold much more of a leadership role within the relationship and maybe with even within your working group. You probably have a tendency to start projects, or if a creative idea has come up, you've figured out the way to implement that project in a way, shape, and form that could be really effective. You're also very good at managing multiple things at the same time. You're a great multitasker, and you have a real good tendency to be highly productive when you want to be. How does that fit?
Yeah, sounds about right.
And then how about your bear counterpart? So if you're looking at the bear world, bears, again, are these really genuine, enjoyable people to be around. They're more of a go with the flow kind of individual. They have a tendency not to get as upset about things. Lions can have a tendency to get a little bit more upset than bears. Bears, you guys are laughing. Am I hitting the nail on the head?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So bears are, again, these are these great people that can, and bears have a tendency to be able to deal with all of the chronotypes really, really well, because it doesn't bother them. You know, they're not as particular about things. You know, let's put it this way. If a bear orders a salad, they don't ask, you know, for dressing on the side and to remove things, whereas a lion or a dolphin probably would.
Wow, that sounds pretty bang on. Oh my goodness. All right, so how can two different chronotypes, and we can use us as an example, okay, how do we go about meshing in a way that's going to work for both of us? Say like getting up early in the morning, or if one of us wants to stay up a little bit later, or yeah, just stuff like that.
Sure, sure. Well, so first of all, I'm shocked that you guys haven't asked me the question that everybody asks me, which is, when do we have sex? Because that seems to be the question that everybody wants to know. And there's actually an entire chapter in the book on that.
When you brought that up earlier, I was going to say, I don't think our listeners would be happy if we darted around that and didn't get into that with you. So why don't we, once we kind of dig into Marnie and I here a little bit, let's dig into when the best time for the listeners.
Of course.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah, exactly. When's the best time for sex?
So when we talk about sleep in general, so here's where it's going to work for you and Marnie. So what you're going to have to do, Jess, is you're going to have to be able to allow Marnie to go to bed when she's beat. Because lions have a tendency that once they're done, they just shut down. They turn off. They're just not really interested. You know, they may be able to watch a little television and then fall asleep while watching the television with you. You're going to be somebody who might stay up maybe a half an hour, 45 minutes longer than she will. And you're also going to want to sleep a little bit later than she does. Marnie, you're going to have a tendency to get up fairly early in the morning, maybe even earlier than your bed partner over there. And if that's the case, you can actually utilize that time, because that is a great time for you to be planning out things that you want to do during your day. You're going to be very creative right after you wake up, like within 30 minutes of waking up. And then you're going to move more into kind of an action mode where you can actually create lists for your day. You'll be able to plan out your day to make sure you're going to be getting the things done that you want to get done. So allow him to sleep in a little. Don't hit the snooze button. Just get up on your own. Allow him to sleep in for about 35, 45 minutes. And I promise you, he's going to be in a better mood and he'll be much easier to deal with.
Okay. So for the partners out there, and I guess this includes us now, can we go about changing our chronotype? So is this something that we're born with? Mm-hmm. Can we kind of work on evolving it over time, or how does that work?
So genetically speaking, you are born with your chronotype. That being said, first of all, children go through very distinct ages where chronotypes emerge in all children. As an example, I have a 14-year-old son and a 12-year-old daughter. So those teenage years they're straight up wolves. That's just what they are. So I don't know if you guys remember back when you were teenagers. My guess is, at least you, Jesse, that you would be far greater likelihood to want to stay up late and sleep late than maybe a lot of your friends, or maybe even than Marnie, because she's kind of got that lion-esque quality. But most teenagers are going to have those very specific ages where they turn into certain chronotypes. We know that infants and up to 3 to 5 year olds are going to be more lions. They're getting up at 5:30. They're ready to rock and roll. So you have distinct ages where certain chronotypes are there. But once you hit about age 18, you're pretty much locked and loaded. And the reason is this is all actually based on genetic propensity for chronotype. There's a gene called the PER3 gene, and the length of that gene denotes sleep drive and also helps understand people's circadian rhythm. So this is all pretty genetic. Now, that being said, if you wanted to wake up early one day or multiple days and train yourself how to do that, there are ways to do that. We discussed that a little bit in the book. But to be honest with you, my thesis is embrace yourself, right? So know yourself and embrace what is really going to be working for you. Trying to work yourself out of a chronotype is probably going to be an effort in futility.
Okay, so that makes sense. And I guess the goal is that it's really important to really embrace who you are, what your makeup is, so
yeah,
you can function, perform at your best, maybe achieve certain goals, weight loss, and of course, have sex. So
exactly.
let's segue into that and talk about how these chronotypes maximize our potential for not only our body, our mind, but other things in our life.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's where it gets really interesting. So we know... So let me back up for just a second. So one of the things that I did was once I learned what people's chronotypes were, then I started to look at different activities during the day and see what hormones are necessary for those activities to be at your best, right? And then once I figured that out during those activities, I matched them up with chronotypes because, for example, a lion chronotype is going to do everything a little bit earlier than a bear chronotype, than a wolf chronotype. So I was actually able to find times of day where certain hormones were at an elevated level where it would actually, whatever the activity is, you would be able to do it in a more productive, more efficient, and actually perform better at it. So here's where it gets real interesting real quick is when we talk about sex. So looking at sex in general, we know that there are certain hormones that people need in order to have sex. And those are testosterone, estrogen, progesterone. You probably need a little bit of cortisol and a little bit of adrenaline. Those are going to be things that are going to be very, very helpful for having sexual activity. What you don't want to have is you don't want to have a lot of melatonin on board because that's the sleep hormone and that's the thing that's going to make you sleepy. I'll give you guys one guess about what happens at night before you go to sleep with your melatonin or any of those hormones.
Well, your melatonin would spike.
Exactly. So all of the things that you need that are need to be on the high are actually on the low. And all the things that you need on the low are actually on the high when it comes to sexual activity. Your melatonin is high, but your testosterone, your progesterone, and your estrogen is all very low during the evening time. There's some great studies to show that the reason that people have sex at night has very little to do with desire and has a lot to do with availability, right? It's just that, hey, you know what? I'm here, you are here, we're in a caring relationship, let's go. And that's very different than actually having a desire, a communication, and things like that. So one of the first things I tell people all the time is morning sex is great. It's going to be definitely, you're going to find that you perform better on a physical level, but also you're going to find that there's going to be much more of an emotional tie to the sexual experience and the sexual activity itself. Now, I get it. Not everybody has the opportunity to have sex in the morning. So what I actually did was I created a matrix. So when you have people who are two different chronotypes, you can actually go into the book and you can put your chronotype on one end and their chronotype on the other end. And I actually give you an early evening time and then an early morning time to just run the experiment and see what your sex is like during that period, during those periods of time. And you may surprise yourself quite a bit.
I'm sure that's going to be helpful for a lot of people. And before we leave this area here, you touched on melatonin. Let's really dig in on that because
sure.
I know a lot of people either supplement with it or they consider supplementing with it. Yep. Let's start out zoomed out talking about what melatonin is and how it affects our sleep. And then let's talk about supplementation and who would want to consider supplementing with it.
Absolutely. So for all of those folks out there, one thing to remember is melatonin is a hormone. Bottom line, this is not a vitamin. This is not a mineral. This is not an herb. This is a hormone that's actually chemically re-engineered. There are very few melatonin supplements that are actually taken from a living creature. They're all actually most of it is created in a laboratory. So that's number one. Number two, because it's not regulated by the FDA, it doesn't matter who produces it. The quality standards are not up to anybody's particular snuff. And so what ends up happening is there's lots of varying quality of melatonin that's out there. Number three, most people also don't know this, but it takes 90 minutes for melatonin once ingested to reach plasma concentration levels for it to actually be effective. What that means is melatonin is a sleep regulator, not a sleep initiator. So remember when we were talking about those two different sleep systems at the beginning of the show where I talked about the drive and the rhythm? Melatonin only affects the rhythm. It does not affect the drive. And because it takes 90 minutes, a lot of people take it right before bed and they wonder why it doesn't work for them. That's because that's not how the hormone works. They have to take it about 90 minutes before they go to bed for them to find it to actually be effective. The other thing that's a little disconcerting is that 95% of the melatonin that's sold in the US today is actually sold in an overdosage format. I see it in 3, 5, and 10 milligrams. The appropriate dose based on the studies out of MIT are between a half and 1 milligram for an average adult. And so most people out there are taking it at the wrong time and they're taking too much of it. Finally, in Europe, melatonin is actually by prescription only. And at very high dosages, it's actually a contraceptive. Most people don't know that either. And so I can't think of a worse thing than giving melatonin to a child. There are a lot of people out there who have children who aren't sleeping well, and they think, okay, I'm going to give my child melatonin. It's natural. I don't think there could be anything worse for a young female developing body to put a contraceptive in there. I just don't agree with it. I would never do it for my daughter, and I would never do it for my son either. You know, most people don't really need a pill to sleep. Now, there are some instances where melatonin actually might be appropriate. So we also know that by around the age 55 or so, that melatonin begins to deplete in our systems. Our ability to produce melatonin begins to reduce. So supplementation in our older population actually can make some good sense and is something that I might recommend. Also, people who are shift workers, so people who work at night as opposed to during the day, some of my firefighters, police officers, military, you know, night shift workers who work in factories, nurses, doctors, those kind of people, actually melatonin might work out very, very well for them because they're trying to sleep when their body is really meant to be awake. And so melatonin could be quite helpful in that scenario. And then the only other scenario that I've seen, well, two others. One is for jet lag. I know that melatonin, actually, there's a lot of good research to show that it works very well for jet lag when taken at the right time and doing the right things. And then finally, there are some children, specifically children who are on the autism spectrum, where melatonin has been shown at higher dosages to actually be highly effective.
Wow. Very interesting. Thanks for the breakdown on that. What about magnesium?
I love magnesium. It's great. We know that magnesium as a mineral is something that many of us are deficient in. Most people don't get enough magnesium in their diet. And so magnesium supplementation is definitely something that I recommend to most of my patients. But I have kind of a unique way to supplement magnesium. Can I give you guys a recipe for how I do it?
We were going to go there if you didn't. Let's dig into the banana tea.
There you go.
Yes.
You've got it. So most people don't know, but that bananas are tremendous for magnesium. But it turns out that the peel has almost three times the amount of magnesium as the fruit. And so, yes, I'm going to do that. I'm going to ask people not to eat the peel, but to use the peel in a way that can be quite helpful for magnesium supplementation. So go out and buy yourself an organic banana. That way there's no pesticides or anything that it's been grown with. Wash it off to make sure you get all the dirt off of it. Cut off the tips, leave the fruit in and the peel on and cut it in half. Put it in about 3 to 4 cups of boiling water for about 3 to 4 minutes and then steep the water into a teacup. If you've got extra left over, you can put it in the fridge and you can have it the next evening if you want. Add a little honey or cinnamon, and it's a fantastic way to get a great big dose of magnesium, and it tastes a lot better than chamomile tea.
Awesome. Now, two quick questions. Do you want spots on the banana? Do you want it slightly green? What's the best ripeness of banana?
I think kind of right in the middle, you know, before you get too spotty, but it doesn't really matter because, all you're doing is looking at it's just getting a little bit riper. So I would say you don't want it green, but you don't want it brown either.
And you want to make sure that it stays, that when you cut the ends, that it's sealed, that like yes. the inside part's not going to leach into the water, because that'll change it, I guess, a little bit, right?
Yeah. And it and what some people have found is they actually put a filter over like a, I don't know what those things are called, like a sieve, and they put it in there. So that way, because a lot of times you're right, the fruit can kind of leak out once it gets kind of mushy. But you know, if you like bananas, people don't really mind. I have some people who actually eat the banana afterwards. They say it's actually really good.
Yeah, we haven't tried the recipe yet, but we'll maybe have to give it a go tonight. Thanks
for that.
There you go. So last supplement I want to touch on before we leave this area here is 5-HTP. And I find this comes up a lot when people are talking about supplements before bed. Do you find this to be beneficial in any way?
So 5-HTP organically, so like what your brain produces, is actually a precursor for melatonin. And so it's actually part of the chain of melatonin production in your brain. I would say if you were going to pick one sleep supplement, it would probably be 5-HTP. But again, remember, very few people's sleeper is broken. You know, most people have the ability to be able to fall asleep and stay asleep without the aid of a supplement. But if you're in one of those situations where it's super high stress, or you're a dolphin in my group, and you've never been a good sleeper, 5-HTP is probably one of the better herbs to try and give a whirl. I would be careful. Make sure you check with your doctor so that any other medication that you're checking doesn't have an interaction effect.
Okay. So let's say someone is suffering from lack of sleep for a long period of time, whether it's stress or just the way that their body works, and they just really can't get a good sleep. So this chronic sleep deprivation, what's happening to the body?
Oh my gosh. So it's kind of more like what isn't happening to the body. You know, when you've got chronic sleep deprivation, it affects every organ system and every disease state. Everything you do better with a good night's sleep. And so, you know, to go into the extreme examples, there's been data that was published just recently that showed that cancer cells multiply faster the more sleep deprived you are. We know that you're emotionally, you have a greater tendency to overreact when you're sleep deprived. We know that your reaction time is three times slower than you normally would be if you're sleep deprived. We know that your body is becoming insulin resistant the more sleep deprived you are. There's a lot of data now to show that sleep deprivation can lead you to a pre-diabetic state in 36 hours. Like, there's some scary stuff going on with sleep deprivation in your health.
Well, let's get into some stuff that can help people from ever getting to that point. And I think a good place to dig in here is from your book, The Sleep Doctor's Diet Plan, where you give 5 steps for sleeping better. And I just love for us to jump into each of these.
Absolutely.
I'll share it and then you can kind of elaborate a little bit. So the first one, sticking to a sleep schedule daily, even on weekends. How is this important?
So if you do one thing other than checking out my new book, then you should do this, keeping a consistent sleep schedule. And it turns out that the wake-up time is more important than the go-to-bed time. And it's because of circadian rhythms, which is actually directly linked to the book. So we know that the more consistently, your body craves consistency. And the more consistent you are with your sleep schedule, the better your body will operate. So if you wake up at 6:30 during the week, you should be waking up at 6:30 on the weekends, even if you stayed out super late and went to the movies or a party or what have you. So keeping a consistent sleep schedule just keeps your body functioning better from a circadian rhythm standpoint, and it will by far help your body know when to sleep and get the best kinds of sleep that you want.
Well, it's interesting because people feel the need that because it's the weekend, it's the chance to get extra or make up on sleep. So it's good that you're elaborating on that. But how can we get people thinking away from that you don't need those extra 2 hours or 3 hours on Saturday morning, especially if you stayed up 3 hours later?
Well, the truth of the matter is you're not getting the right kind of sleep. So remember how we were talking about sleep at the beginning of the program, and we said you get the bulk of your stage 3-4 sleep at the beginning of the night and then the bulk of your REM sleep at the back end of the night? Just because you sleep in doesn't mean that you're getting more of the sleep that you missed. So if you go to bed 3 hours later, you've missed that stage 3-4 sleep. If you sleep an extra 3 hours the next day, you're not going to get that stage 3-4 sleep. I kind of think sleep is sort of like a baseball game. If the baseball game starts at 8 o'clock, if you show up at 9:30, they don't restart the baseball game at 9:30, right? The game started at 8 o'clock and you're showing up at the third inning. The same holds true is if you go to bed or if you go to the baseball game 2 hours early. Yeah, you might see a little bit of batting practice, but the game isn't going to start until the game is supposed to start. And that's all based on your circadian rhythm. And this is why consistency turns out to be the most important factor for sleep.
I love that. And I've never heard it put that way. So great analogy. So second one, stop all caffeine by 2 p.m. This one is a toughie, especially for someone like me who I'm not crazy with my caffeine, but I like my green teas sometimes with dinner or later on in the day. Let's talk about this and how caffeine can affect us well after consumption.
Sure. So most people don't know, but caffeine has a half-life of between 6 and 8 hours, which means half of it will be in your system 6 to 8 hours after you ingest it. And so the reason that I chose 2 o'clock is because on average, a lot of people are going to bed around 10:30. And that was about, you know, again, if you're a slow or a fast metabolizer, that would allow for at least half of the caffeine to be out of your system. Now, I have people who come to me all the time and they say, hey, Dr. Bruce, I can drink, 3 espressos at dinner and I can fall right to sleep. If I placed electrodes on those people's heads while they were sleeping, here's what I would find is, yeah, they are falling asleep. And the reason they are is because they're so doggone exhausted from their sleep deprivation. But the actual quality of the sleep that they are getting is not very good. They're going to have a lot of alpha waves in there, and they're not going to be getting that physically restorative sleep, which is really what they're looking for. Also, I also tell people that caffeine isn't the thing that you want to have right as the first liquid in the morning. Most people also don't know, but you actually breathe out approximately 1 liter of water while you're asleep. And so when you wake up, you are officially dehydrated. The best thing that you can do when you wake up is to drink a 8 to 12 ounce glass of room temperature water to rehydrate yourself. Also, your cortisol levels are quite high. That's one of the things that wakes you up in the morning. And adding caffeine to a cortisol doesn't actually do anything but give you the jitters. If you wait between 90 and 120 minutes after you wake up, so if you wake up at 6:30, around 8:30, that's when you have your first caffeine ingestion, whether it's green tea or coffee or what have you, what you will find is that your cortisol level has begun to drop and that this caffeine will actually pick you back up. You will not have the jitters like so many people do when they drink too much coffee in the mornings. But if you can keep your green tea drinking to a low roar after 2 o'clock or go decaf, my suggestion would be that you will actually have significant better quality sleep. You know, and that's kind of a theme that we've been talking about. But most people, when they think about sleep, they think about minutes or hours, but they also need to think about the quality of that sleep.
So important. Thanks for sharing that. I think Jesse's got a lot to take home from that. So the next one, no alcohol within 3 hours of bedtime.
So alcohol, let me back up. There's a big difference between going to sleep and passing out. And passing out usually occurs from multiple, beverages, whereas going to sleep is a little bit different. But, alcohol does make us feel sleepy, especially when we drink it later in the evening. There was a great study, and actually I talk about this in my book, looking at happy hour. So it turns out that when you drink alcohol between 5 and 7 in the evening for almost all chronotypes, specifically bears, it actually makes you feel jubilant. It makes you feel awake and energetic. But when you start drinking past that, 8:30, 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, all it's doing is it's fogging up your cognition and it's making you feel pretty tired. The problem is it takes the average individual approximately 1 hour per alcoholic beverage to get the alcohol out of your system. And that can be problematic because alcohol prevents you from getting into the deeper stages of sleep. So when you have alcohol on board, it turns out that it's actually making you have that hangover even more than the dehydration that you're experiencing. So if you stop approximately 1 hour per alcoholic beverage, you'll be surprised at how much better you feel. So if you have 2 drinks with dinner or 3 drinks with dinner and you stop at 8, then you're probably going to be hitting the hay around 10:30, 11 o'clock at night.
So again, like the caffeine, it's affecting the quality. And just Absolutely. Because you're in bed for that period of time, we can be tricking ourselves and thinking we're getting enough sleep, but we're way off the mark.
Exactly.
Okay, so number 4, stop exercising 4 hours before bed. Why is this the case?
So if you want to improve the quality of your sleep, the single best way to do so is to exercise regularly. You don't have to run a marathon, 20, 25 minutes of, you know, cardiovascular exercise is going to be helpful. There is, however, a subgroup of people who get energy from exercise. And that's why I ask people to stop around 4 hours before bed. But the caveat here is if exercise mellows you out, then you can probably exercise as close to bedtime as 2 hours. You just have to understand what does it do to you. What I've found is in my higher anxious people, exercising before bed has a tendency to mellow them out. So my dolphins and my lions actually can exercise pretty well in the evenings, whereas my bears and my lions, it actually doesn't work so well.
I'm definitely a morning exerciser, 100%. So the last one, 15 minutes of morning sunlight. So for us being in Canada, we've got very cold winters. How do we maximize this during that time? And why is it so important to get that sunlight in the morning?
So sunlight, about 8 or 10 years ago, there was a discovery that there are certain cells in your eye called melanopsin cells. And these cells, using a particular wavelength of light, specifically 460 nanometers, or what we call blue light, actually affects those cells. And when it hits those cells, it shuts off the melatonin faucet in your brain. You want that because that's what helps you wake up in the morning. So getting 15 minutes of sunlight really ensures that you're up and alert. So for those wolves out there who would much rather stay up until 1 and sleep until 9, sunlight turns out to be a critical, critical factor for them because it really helps them wake up and get to work. So, and by the way, most people are vitamin D deficient. So getting 15 minutes of sunlight is going to be quite helpful. If it's cold outside you're unable to actually go outside to get that direct sunlight, standing next to a window will work, or you can even buy a commercially available light box. You'd be quite surprised, but they can be very, very effective.
Michael, a lot of times on the show, we dig into the guest morning routine, but I think it'd be a lot more appropriate for us to dig into your personal bedtime routine. So can you take us through, say in the evening, because we know quality sleep starts with a lot of the things we're doing well before we go to sleep.
Yep.
Let's take us through after dinner, all the different things you're doing to optimize your sleep.
Sure. So I actually follow my own rules, believe it or not. But I'm a wolf, so I'm much more of a night person. So I have a tendency to eat a little bit later in the evenings, more 7:30, 8 o'clock. That actually helps me, that helps prevent me from snacking really late, because if I eat at 6 o'clock, my wolf stomach wants to eat again at 11. And so I find that if I'm eating between 7:30 and 8, I have less of a tendency to snack late at night and have those sweet cravings, which so many people experience. So I usually eat a little bit later with my wife and my kids, because we're all actually wolves. We have a whole wolf pack here. Number two is I do an electronic curfew approximately an hour before I get in bed. I stop with the phone and the tablets and the laptops and really trying to allow myself to kind of mellow out a bit. There is one caveat though, and I tell this to everybody, and I have to be truthful, is my wife and I fall asleep with the television on every single night. And so people are going to be like, oh my gosh, that's the worst thing. How can you possibly do that? So there's reasons why we do that. My wife has actually always done that her entire life. And what she finds is it's actually a great distraction for her to be able to fall asleep. But we don't actually watch the TV. What we do is we listen to the TV. We turn the brightness very low and we kind of close our eyes and we don't listen to something that we're just dying to see, right? It might be an old episode of, Seinfeld or, something like that, where it's just kind of going on in the background, just enough for us to listen, but not to get wrapped up in our brain, because so many people have a hard time falling asleep at night because they can't turn off their brain. The other thing that I do that a lot of people don't recommend, but I have no problem with, is we have animals in our bed. I have my bulldog and my chihuahua and sometimes my cat, and sometimes my child ends up wandering into our bed. The good news is we have a big bed. And we make sure that we're super comfortable in our bed. We change our mattress out every 6 to 7 years, making sure that we have the right comfort and support. We change our pillows every 12 to 18 months because the structural integrity of the pillow will begin to fail after that period of time. And I also make sure that I'm well hydrated, because I know that I'm going to become dehydrated in the mornings. It's critical for me to have enough water in me to be able to do that. Now, the other thing that I do that's kind of interesting is I work with a company called Lighting Science Group. And if you check out their website, they actually make specialized light bulbs that are pro-sleep and pro-wake. And so in my bedside table lamp, when I'm reading before bed, which is what I have a tendency to do while my wife is watching television, I have a lamp there that actually, believe it or not, only emits waveforms that will not stop the production of melatonin. And then in my bathroom, I have awake and alert bulbs that actually do help and give almost the same as sunlight. So we've got it kind of dialed in here at the Bruce household, and we sleep pretty well.
That's amazing. Now, what's the name of that lamp beside your bed?
If you just go to the website, it's Lighting Science Group, I think is what you would go to. And I think it's like lsgc.com. And they have the bulbs commercially available for sale right there.
Perfect. And not sure if you emphasize this, but when you're watching TV before bed, you're turning on a sleep timer. Is that correct? So that it's going off?
I am. Okay. Sorry. Thank you for reminding me. That is 100% correct. Yes, the timer does go off.
Yeah, so important. I'm just thinking of my poor mama, who unfortunately watches like CSI and like crime shows before bed. and the TV sometimes and often gets left on. And once upon a time when I was living in the same house, I'd walk in at night and I just turn it off. So I'm glad we addressed the sleep timer.
I promise the TV timer is on.
Awesome. So let's talk about the ultimate mattress and pillow. What do we want to be sleeping on? What's the quality? What's the texture? What do we want?
So it's interesting. You know, different times in your life, you're going to want to have different types of mattresses. And this is a whole podcast unto itself, to be honest with you, because it gets kind of complicated. But one of the things I tell people is don't look at timing for mattresses. Listen to your body. And so if you're waking up with aches and pains and low back pain or side pains or things like that, it's probably time to get a new bed. I tell people don't go any longer than probably 7 or 8 years with the same mattress. But there are certain times in your life where you're going to have to get a new mattress. Like, you know, if God forbid you're in a car accident or you're diagnosed with a pain disorder like a fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue, there are different support levels that you're going to want to have. And so it gets, as I said before, it gets kind of complicated to kind of dial that in. But what you want to think about a couple of things are, do you want a spring, air, or foam? And some of the foam has issues because it can sleep very hot. So if temperature is a big factor for you, you probably want to stay away from most foam mattresses or foam-based mattresses and stick with air or springs. And then if pain is an issue for you, like you have torn discs or something like that, if you don't have a temperature issue, foam is actually going to be really good because it stabilizes your position and you don't move around a whole lot, because with some of my patients, especially ones with disc problems, we have to stabilize them so that they don't re-injure themselves at night.
Okay, and you mentioned that you have a later dinner, but what about people in general? Is there a rule of thumb where I've heard different things over the years where carbs are good before bed, or mm-hmm. having a tablespoon of a nut butter so you get some protein. Other people say nothing before bed. So what's the ideal? Like, should we be going to bed with any type of food in our system?
So you should never go to bed hungry. That's going to be an important thing. But you also need to be careful about some of the things that you eat right before bed. Very spicy meals within 2 or 3 hours of going to sleep are going to potentially cause nightmares and something called gastroesophageal reflux disease. So you want to be kind of careful about that. There is a lot of data to show that carbohydrates before bed do help with sleep. And we think this is because when you ingest carbohydrates, it actually increases your serotonin levels. And serotonin is that calming, soothing, love, relaxation hormone that you want to be emitting right before bed. And there's actually even one study that looked at carbohydrates helping in increase the production of melatonin. So there's lots of reasons to eat carbs at your final meal of the day. Now, that might fly in the face of some of the recommendations that people have had historically about dieting for some of the paleo groups or things like that. I'm not saying anything against that. I'm just saying that there is data to show that carbs, specifically good carbs, are the ones that can actually help you fall asleep at night.
And that would tie into the 5-HTP thing, where having 5-HTP is going to convert to serotonin, and same kind of thing there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also funny, you know, people always ask me about turkey because turkey has tryptophan in it. You'd have to eat a 46-pound turkey to get enough tryptophan to be able to actually have an effect on you. And tryptophan does not work well in the presence of protein. So if you did eat a 46-pound turkey, it probably would just make you sick.
And I also find that chocolate can be controversial too, in terms of, mm-hmm. you know, it's got the caffeine depending on the quality or the type,
right.
but it's also got the magnesium. So I actually find that like a square or two of dark chocolate doesn't actually affect me at night. But if I take it or have chocolate during the day, and I have chocolate every day, sometimes multiple times a day, I will get a surge during the day. But at night, it sometimes can calm me down. Can you speak to this at all? Or
sure. So first of all, my wife told me a long time ago that if I start telling people that they can't have chocolate, she's going to divorce me instantly. So I do not tell anybody that they can't have chocolate. And the truth of the matter is chocolate has got so many great antioxidants and good things in it that a square or two before bed is not going to have a major effect on you. And plus, the amount of caffeine that's really in it is pretty minor. So I'm all for chocolate at night. Obviously, you don't want to eat large quantities of it because of the sugar, as well as if you are conscious about your weight, it's an easy way to add a lot of calories. But, you know, having a square or two of dark chocolate at night is definitely going to be helpful.
Sure. And of course, we're talking about the high quality organic dark chocolate. So the Absolutely. Listeners don't get the wrong idea out there.
Yeah, for sure.
So Michael, let's talk about hot showers, saunas, ice baths. So kind of going across the whole spectrum there.
Sure.
Are these things good before bed, or are they good for certain people before bed? What are your thoughts?
So there's actually data to show that a hot bubble bath can be very sleep inducing. And the reason we talk about bubble baths is because if you put bubbles in the bath, it forms a layer of insulation across the top of the water, and it keeps the water hotter longer. And so when you get into a bathtub and it's got a nice, like a really hot, nice bathtub, what happens is your core body temperature increases. When you get out, your core body temperature drops, and that core body temperature drop mimics the same drop that you have when you're going to sleep. So it is actually a great way to help you fall asleep. You want to stay away from ice baths and cold or even cool baths in the evening. However, in your morning showers, if you're having issues waking up in the morning, having a cool shower, not a cold shower, but a cool shower in the morning is a great way to re-energize yourself. It shunts blood to your core, which actually helps wake you up.
Yeah, Jesse and I have been experimenting with that. It does feel really good. Yeah. Now, quick question about the bubbles, because when I think back to my childhood, although everyone...
Mr. Bubble.
Are there some good quality bubbles we can get our hands on these days? I haven't even looked into it in so long.
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. That's a great question. I would tell you that anything that really forms a full-on layer is going to help you with keeping that water hotter longer.
Okay, good. And I know essential oils are also awesome to put into the tub as
Yeah. You know, I've learned a lot about essential oils lately. Of course, lavender is probably one of the best ones, but also ylang-ylang is another good one. And believe it or not, vanilla has been shown to have some sleep-inducing effects.
Ooh, and you'll smell so good before bed too.
Exactly.
So I want to dig into one of my favorite subjects, and that's dreams. And, you know, they're just such a fascinating... They're so fascinating. What is happening to our mind while we are sleeping? And like, what is the purpose? And I don't think people really fully understand or comprehend this whole alternate world that we have when we're sleeping.
Sure. So just to be at the outset, I am not a dream researcher or a dream specialist, and I don't do dream interpretation, but I can tell you about what goes on during REM sleep. So we can dream in any stage of sleep, but we have a greater likelihood, almost 80-something percent chance, if we wake somebody up in REM sleep that they're actually going to report a dream. And what the general theory is that we know during REM sleep you're moving information from your short-term memory to your long-term memory, and you're actually placing it in an organizational structure that makes it easy to retrieve if you've got information that you're going to want to use for problem solving and things like that. And so what we think is going on is that a dream is actually a manifestation of that process of filtering out the unnecessary stimuli and then grabbing the important stuff and putting it into that organizational structure that's going to be important for retrieval later. Nightmares can be a little bit different. Nightmares are a very different kind of dream. While they do happen during your unconscious, they are usually surrounding some level of trauma or an anniversary of a trauma or something else that could be going on that's stressful in your life.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Yeah. And thanks for kind of taking the scientific approach. Yeah. It would be great if you interpreted dreams. I would share mine last night, but no, it's good to understand just the purpose of them and their role in our body.
I was just going to say, I also have a free ebook all about the scientific study of dreams on my website. So if people end up wandering over there, there's no cost whatsoever. You can download it very easily.
Perfect. And we'll link that up in our show notes. So what we're going to do now in wrapping up is we're going to go through a rapid fire question round just to get to know you a little better. Sound good?
Sure. Absolutely. Throw it out there.
Perfect. So the first thing, Michael, what is one thing that most people don't know about you?
I have a tattoo of a pink panther on my left thigh.
Nice. When did you get that?
Got it in college. Our mascot was a pink panther.
All right. And what is your greatest fear?
My greatest fear, anything happening, any physical harm happening to my children.
What is the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Oh, that's good. Don't take life too seriously, I think is probably one of the best pieces of advice that I've ever been given. Sometimes you have a tendency to think that things are much more stressful than they really are and think that things matter more than they really do. And so I've really taken to heart the idea of not taking myself or many things too seriously.
That's a great one. We can all use a refresher on. Next one, what are two things you do each and every morning to get your day started on the right foot?
Oh, great question. So number one is I drink between 8 and 12 ounces of water every morning to rehydrate myself. And then I actually meditate for 1 minute in the shower. And so what I do is I turn and I face the spout and I have the water hit me literally right in the forehead. And when it does that, it makes it kind of difficult to breathe. Like you really have to sit there and concentrate on your breathing and you can only breathe in through your mouth and out through your mouth. And I do that for approximately 1 minute. And I don't know if it's the cool water or it's the breathing or the inability to think of anything else, but it really brings me right into the moment and then I'm ready to start my day.
That's a great new practice. I'm going to have to try that.
It's really good.
Yeah, really unique. So what is one of your favorite snacks to bring with you on the go?
Well, unfortunately, you can't bring ice cream with you on the go because that is my favorite food of all time. I'm a raw nut kind of guy. I like cashews and almonds and walnuts and pistachios. I've always kind of had an affinity for nuts and as a snack, so that's one of my favorites.
Our faves too. Not so much the ice cream, but nuts definitely. We carry those with us everywhere. So, Michael, in wrapping up here, you've dropped so much great knowledge around the subject of sleep. What is one thing we can all take after the show, apply to our sleep routine tonight to help us have the ultimate sleep?
I would say one of the easiest things you could do is go to thepowerofwhenquiz.com and figure out what your chronotype is and respect it and know when you should be sleeping. So Marnie, for you, you might be needing to go to bed a little bit earlier than you normally do. Don't try to stay up as late as Jesse. And Jesse, you need to be able to sleep in a little bit longer than she does. And I think you'll both have much better sleep because of it.
Okay, great advice. Thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been fantastic. Where can the listeners go other than going to take the quiz, getting a copy of your new book, The Power of When? Where can they go connect with you after the show and reach out?
Sure. So I'm on Facebook as thesleepdoctor.com. I'm on Twitter as thesleepdoctor. I guess there's no .com on Facebook. And then and my website, which is thesleepdoctor.com. People can always write me there. I have a blog there as well as on Huffington Post and the Dr. Oz Show.
All right. Well, thanks again. This has been super informative. We'll keep in touch and wishing you all the best with the launch of the new book. Take care.
Thank you both very much. This has been awesome. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. It's been our pleasure. Hope you guys loved that episode with Dr. Bruce. So much good information. And just want to mention again that, Jesse and I had that incredible weekend over at Via Mead, and we did a lot of posting, a lot of sharing on Instagram. So if you want to get a sense of what the resort is all about and some of the activities that we did, go ahead and follow us on Instagram at Ultimate Health Podcast and take a look. Goji had a great time there too. She had the best time swimming in the lake. We had the best time and we can't wait to go back there. See you guys on Instagram and have a great week.
And yeah, we're really loving the Instagram story, so be sure to follow us there. Follow along all the healthy things we're doing day to day. It's been a lot of fun posting there. And wishing you guys a great week. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.